So this state of yoga nidra that's being described here, the point is being made that it's very distinct from the sleeping experience that we have. And what's going on when we hear of this Krishna or Mahavishnu, Karana Daksha Vishnu, sleeping, is that Krishna is actually enjoying pastimes while he's sleeping. He's actually internally enjoying pastimes. It's not a sort of a state of void, as it says that it's beyond this wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. Krishna's fully conscious, fully active, even though he appears to be sleeping. So that's just to kind of understand that. And then compared to us, you know, when we sleep, we have so much of our conditioning come up. You know, we know Freud was considered a great influence on the 20th century because he explored the unconscious. What's lying within our unconscious? It's not pastimes. We're not enjoying our sort of leela in our unconscious. It's all the pain and traumas coming up from our conditioning. So there's a two totally different realms. Of course, when someone's a pure devotee, such as Srila Prabhupada, when he's sleeping, we can understand it's not that there's any muck coming up. There's no material propensities in the pure devotee. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam that says that it's describing the Mahabhagavat devotee, and it states that not even the thoughts for sex life, for spending money, or for social prestige occur within the mind of a pure devotee. Not even the thought of it. So there's one verse, I'm not sure where it is, it's somewhere in the Vedas. Utishta jagrata prapyavarana mudita kshurasya dharanishtatu rachaya. Katastat kavyo vidanti. It says, Utishta jagrata, wake up, sleeping souls. You're sleeping on the lap of the witch called Maya. Beautifully poetic. You're sleeping on the lap of the witch called Maya. We're just complacent. People are just actually sleepwalking in material life. They're sleepwalking. They have no absolute reference point. It's all, you know, this all-pervading concept of yata mata tata pata. You know, you have your path, he's got his path, you know, they've got their path, I've got my path. You know, how do you differentiate? You know, is one better than the other? People don't think that that's the case. They don't think you can actually make a hierarchy of quality. You know, which one is a higher quality path than anyone else's? It's just you've got your path and I've got my path. And the interesting thing is that, you know, everyone's got their paradigm, their worldview, their understanding of reality. And they're not thinking that reality is greater than themselves. They're not thinking that there's a truth greater than themselves. This does not occur to them because they're not God conscious. They're not understanding that all truth comes from Krishna. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. They're not understanding that absolute perspective. So without the absolute perspective, everything is relative. And Socrates made this point that everyone's doing what they think is right. Everyone. You know, from George Bush, who orchestrated the Twin Tower bombing. You know, he thought that was right in his own mind. I'm sure the editors will knock that bit out, the point is that Socrates said, and it's very true, it's on camera as well. Okay. So we should get some security for me after this, right? So, now, the point is that Socrates said that if somebody deep down didn't think that what they were doing was right, they wouldn't do it. They can rationalize it. There's a rationalization going on. And if somebody deep down didn't think that what they believed was right, they wouldn't believe it. You see, you have to understand that people are disconnected from Krishna. They're disconnected from their original consciousness, their actual identity. So just as a person in the loony bin, you know, he thinks he's Napoleon. Yeah, you can't, he's there because he really thinks he's Napoleon. You know, if he didn't really think he was Napoleon, he wouldn't be sort of carrying on like he does. Unless he's in the theater or something, but that's another case. But people think what they think because that's what they really believe. And whenever they, you know, somebody's a butcher. He really, you know, you can't tell him, you know, sir, excuse me, you know, you're going to get incredible karma for, it's not even going to come into his ken. It doesn't really come into that paradigm that he is living in. So therefore, he'll just defend himself. And it's the expertise of Krishna's devotees that is able to sort of penetrate people's paradigms and just throw in a little something that's spiritual. And then when you do that, if you can just throw in something that's a little spiritual into a person's paradigm, that little spiritual element will create havoc to that person's paradigm. Because what it'll do, that person will start to reinterpret all that paradigm, all the information in their worldview. They will start to reinterpret it. It's mystical. That's what happened to us, you know. So it's quite mystical how that happens. The whole reinterpretation process goes on. And you start to realize that Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Gauri Nitai Ki Jai, Iskanga Rivrinda Ki Jai. That something spiritual is absolute. So then once that absolute is there in the equation, it isn't all relative anymore. They have this absolute reference point. And from that, you can start to reinterpret all your values and all your understanding. And suddenly you can see that there is a hierarchy, whereas you couldn't see it before. The butcher thought, well, I'm a butcher, you know, I'm better than the person who's a thief. And the thief has got his rationalization. I wouldn't be a thief if it wasn't for this completely unjust system we're in. How am I supposed to earn a living in this crummy system? I don't want to be on a treadmill just working for some guy, you know, 9 to 5, never getting ahead, paying off a mortgage. Ridiculous, you know. So he's got his rationalization for being a thief. A drug addict's got his rationalization. Drug dealer's got his rationalization. All of them have got it. But once you put that transcendental element in, the spiritual element, the understanding that there is an absolute truth, then you can evaluate everything again. And you can start to see that, okay, what is my self-interest? I can start to see that, you know, you can start to understand that even instinctively, you can, without knowing the terms, you know, you can see there's the mode of ignorance, there's the mode of passion, there's the mode of goodness. And then, you know, because they've got this spiritual perspective, now there is a spiritual element as well. And a person, you know, I remember hearing one class of Sri Dayananda Maharaj's, and he said that, oh, I forgot to bring that book. Is there a Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1 in the house? You got it on there, right? Dharma Sonistata Pumsam. Got it? Huh? I'll get it 1 second, just a second. 2.8. Right, one class of Sri Dayananda Maharaj, he said that the essence of being a person is freedom. It's a fascinating, it's a very fascinating kind of examination of the whole question of, you know, being bound by karma and being free. And the essence of being a person, he said, is freedom. He said there's life. Life means freedom. And death, and he had this concept of freedom and necessity. He said, something that has no freedom has to act of necessity. It has to act of necessity. For instance, you know, this lectern here, I can do what I want with it. I can put it here, I can put it there, I can do this. But if I did it to a person, they have freedom to sort of say, I don't like that. I don't like being flicked in the head over and over like that. It bothers me. It's disturbing. Stop it. And so a person with some spiritual understanding can understand this concept of freedom, that's where it's at, basically. And this, what I consider possibly the most beautiful writing ever committed in English is in this purport of Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 8, where Prabhupada says, the need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. When I first read that, I was just practically, my hairs were standing on end, and I've read it so many times, it's just beautiful. Prabhupada goes on to say, that complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. So that's the point, that when we're connected to Krishna, Krishna's the source of our existence, we're being nourished. Everything's covered, everything's taken care of if we're connected to Krishna. That nourishment is coming to us. When we're disconnected to Krishna, that nourishment isn't coming to us. And then we start wondering, where am I going to get my nourishment from? And we start trying to get it from other people. We're not trying to get it from the Supreme Person. We're trying to get it from other people. Other people are limited. There's only so much they can give. And then there's all these, you know, this is where relationships actually break down. You know, someone's too needy, or someone's too demanding. And it's all because of the imbalance created from disconnection with Krishna. That's where it all comes from. And that connection with Krishna comes from us trying to please Krishna and serve Krishna. We just have to, this is where, you know, the happiness, the contentedness comes from the service. We can read the books, you know, till the cows come home, but unless we actually put it into practice and do some service, then we're not going to get any You know, this is like, where Satchitananda? Satchitananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So from the books, you can get a sense of your eternality. You're getting your knowledge, but you can't actually get your bliss from the books unless it's your service, or unless you approach it as your service. You know, and then if you do that, it'll continue to expand. The service will actually continue to expand beyond just the intellectual level of understanding what's in the books. It'll become, you know, service is meant to be unlimited. Now, when we think about service, often we think in a limited way about service, that, you know, my service is book distribution, or my service is to be pujari, or my service is to wash the pots, cook the offerings. My service is to sweep the floor. It's kind of, my understanding is that, well, it's meant to be in any situation that we're in. Whatever situation we're in, we're meant to be doing it as a service to Krishna and to please Krishna. And I was thinking that sometimes for recreation, some of us play tennis. And I'm thinking that, well, you know, you can play tennis either in separation from Krishna, or if you're going to play tennis, you can play tennis as a service to Krishna. Similarly, you know, we sometimes tell each other jokes, and then you can actually tell a joke as a service to Krishna. You can actually do anything as a service to Krishna. You know, bringing up your family. You can bring up your family in order to sort of get some, you know, you got a notion of, some people want their kid to be a doctor, you know, because then there's some prestige for the parents. That's not service to Krishna. You know, if you bring up your kid as a service to Krishna, you're just going to be looking, what is the propensity of this child? And, you know, let's try and facilitate this child going back to Godhead. There's a different mindset when everything's done as a service to Krishna. Many times on the street I meet people who say, you know, yeah, well, I'm so disillusioned with life, and I'm so sort of bitter because, you know, sometimes I meet someone and they've given a generous donation. I say, wow, that's really generous. Thank you. That was brilliant, you know. And they go, I like to be generous, but, you know, I find that I've been betrayed so many times. You know, I'd like to give to people, but often they take advantage of me. And I sort of come to realize, you know, good guys finish last. And they're disillusioned. And why is that? It's, it's because they're not connected to Krishna. If they're giving to please Krishna, then even if people don't reciprocate, it doesn't make any difference. Because you've pleased Krishna. You've got your nourishment from Krishna. So therefore you're equipoised. Win, lose or draw doesn't make any difference. Because you're quite happy to have pleased Krishna. It's an incredible concept, actually. Sometimes on Sankirtan, you know, I'm going out with Eddie, and sometimes it's just not happening. You know, we're losing bad. Nobody's stopping, nobody's giving. Every Sankirtan devotee goes through this, you know, instant recognition. If anyone has done books, you know, it just dries up sometimes. It's just not happening. No matter what way you're coming in, it's just, you're being shut out. But, you know, what is the purpose? What is the motive? Is it because of the money? Is it because of the prestige? You know, I can't, you know, go home and tell people that I only did this many books, you know. I'll be humiliated. I'll be, my reputation or whatever will suffer. But if the motive is, you know, well, I'm just out here doing the yajna, performing this yajna for Krishna, to please Krishna, and I'm just going to do it, win, lose, or draw, then you'll get to the end of the day, and you'll have performed your prescribed duty, and you'll have been strengthened by that performance of your prescribed duty. You'll have been strengthened by that. How am I doing on time? Okay. So this is the point about staying connected to Krishna and trying to please Krishna and doing everything as a service to Krishna. And then by doing that, by getting your nourishment from Krishna, from that connection with Krishna, then with, oh yeah, that's what I was going to say, with dealing with other people, then this doesn't happen to you that, you know, you're disappointed. Hridayananda Maharaj in that lecture was saying how one person asked a question and said, Maharaj, you know, I'm accepting what you say, but sometimes, you know, I need to clarify things in my mind, and I reveal and clarify things that are, you know, I'm not confused about, and I approach a devotee and I reveal my mind to that devotee in confidence. I reveal my mind to that person in confidence, and then they go and tell somebody else. And I'm sort of feeling totally high and dry, totally let down. You know, then suddenly it's on the ISKCON grapevine, and I told them this thing in confidence. I was devastated. And then Maharaj's answer was, he said, did you reveal your mind to that person as a service to Krishna? Or did you reveal your mind to that person because, you know, somebody had upset you, and you're revealing your mind to this person, to this other devotee, about how this other devotee had upset you, and you're just kind of getting support for your case. You want moral support. You want justification that, you know, this person was acted in an offensive way, and that happens sometimes. That happens, you know, often actually. You know, somebody's offended us, and we go talk it up about somebody. Oh, that person did, you know, don't tell anybody, but this guy did this to me. And all you want is that person to support you. You're just wanting some moral backing that, and to sort of like justify. So that's not, and Maharaj said, that's not, you means you didn't reveal your mind as a service to Krishna. Because, and then he referred to Bhagavad Gita, how in charity, when you give in charity, you give in the mode of goodness, when you give in charity, it's according to, you know, you give at the right time, to the right person, at the right place. All of these things have to be in place. So when you're revealing your mind, you have to reveal your mind to the right person with the right motive as a service to Krishna, because you want to reconcile something within yourself. And so often, you know, when we reveal our mind, we don't care what the person tells us. We don't take it on board. We're not submissively inquiring. We're not submissively inquiring. We've already made up our mind who's right and who's wrong. We're not seeking clarification. So that's not as a service to Krishna. So we have to be very, we have to kind of like get into the detail. Prabhupada would say that devotion is in the detail. So we have to get into the detail of how we are acting and thinking and behaving, and ask ourselves at every, you know, as much as we can, am I doing this as a service to Krishna? Because, you know, I know myself on Sankirtan often, you know, I catch myself becoming miserly. You know, I'm not doing this as a service to Krishna. I'm doing this because some very mundane reason. And suddenly, you know, Krishna withdraws. Krishna withdraws. And then I have to somehow be causelessly merciful, and often, you know, to actually get the flow back, get the connection and the nourishment, get that back. You know, I have to be extra generous. And then I think, okay, I'm waiting, Krishna. When's, you know, now's the time to give me the mercy, because I just was extra generous. But then when Krishna sees that I'm being extra generous just because that's my identity, that's the nature of a devotee. The nature of a devotee is that they're always giving without thought of return. They're just trying to please Krishna. When I understand that it's an identity issue, it's not a sort of strategy issue anymore, it's an identity issue, I'm giving because that's the identity of a devotee. That's who I am. I'm a devotee. Then suddenly Krishna comes on board, and then things are sailing along again. So, time's up. Any questions or comments?